This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. People in parts of Illinois are already heading back to the polls with school board and some city elections this spring. What's different this year is the role Illinois' major political parties are taking in these very local races, from coaching candidates to even running ads on their behalf. Earlier this week, Ben Zielinski reported on this for Capital News Illinois. He's a statehouse reporter there, and he joins me now for our Friday look at politics. Ben, welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So what are some of the trends you've been seeing with this major party involvement in these local races this year?
Yeah, on the Democrat side, it's actually very specific. This is the second local election cycle in a row, the first being 2023, where the state party is actually directly getting involved in races, supporting specific candidates. There's going to be outreach in the form of mailers and advertising via text message and digital platforms. So they're applying a lot of really the same strategies that you see them normally apply during a general election in even numbered years. And their objective here is really to bolster candidates who they believe are like-minded, like Democrats, have Democratic values. On the Republican side, there's not really a concentrated party effort behind things, but we are seeing some more grassroots movements, specifically state representatives getting involved in school board races, for example. Some local conservative groups are also getting involved, raising money, local Republican groups. So it's, really seems to be part of this trend of, the partisan organizations are getting much more involved in local races that are technically nonpartisan.
Yeah, it's interesting because you think back the last few years, when I think of sort of organizing at the local level, it was like Moms for Liberty and these groups that were, organizing to challenge books in libraries and school curricula, maybe over LGBT issues or things like that. I guess, do the Democrats see what they're doing as a response to that?
Absolutely. And that's exactly why they started doing this in 2023. They saw that these local conservative groups were really getting involved and they were boosting a lot of candidates and getting a lot of name ID for a lot of their school board or library board candidates. And they were worried that they were going to lose some of these critical local decision-making folks to, a conservative majority of people who might favor some book bans or other things like that. And the Democrat Party, they decided that, yeah, it is time that we get involved in this. And, certainly if they do get involved, one could argue that they might have an upper hand because they just have such a massive financial advantage over the state Republican Party, but also certainly over any local organization that gets involved.
There are a lot of other stories you've covered lately. I want to spend some time on those as well. The state budget, of course, continues to be a big focus in Springfield. Last week, the General Assembly's independent sort of budget forecasting arm, the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, came out with its numbers for the state's next fiscal year. What does that look like? How is it different from what the governor was telling lawmakers a few weeks ago?
Yeah, basically what we saw from that commission is that they are a lot less optimistic about revenue coming into the state than the governor's office is. And the commission has noted that they believe that even with the revenue changes that Governor Pritzker has proposed, the state budget would still be about $700 million lower in revenue than what the governor's office is projecting. So that certainly leaves a pretty sizable difference that, lawmakers are going to have to decide exactly where that revenue number is ultimately going to fall. The big difference here was that the governor's office was looking at a December S&P Global forecast that was a little bit more optimistic, and they certainly took the baseline forecast as their revenue projection from that projection. And what CAGFA did here in February is that they looked at a more recent report from S&P Global that seemed to factor in a little bit more of Donald Trump's policies, the tariffs, the uncertainty about federal spending. And that outlook was a lot more reserved and conservative. And CAGFA actually adopted the more pessimistic outlook from S&P, which is pretty notable given that the governor's office decided to adopt a baseline forecast rather than a pessimistic forecast. So that's really where the difference is. It's kind of just, how each side is kind of feeling out the economy that we're in and the tariffs and the Trump administration. CAGFA really noted that it's going to take a couple months, potentially May or later, to really get a good handle on what fiscal year 2026 is going to be like in the economy.
Interesting. So the governor's rhetoric certainly was not optimistic, but you're saying maybe his financial estimate was a little more on the optimistic side, at least than some other people out there. One of the big questions that's hanging over all the budget situation in Illinois and every other state really is the billions of dollars that federal officials have put on hold. We've heard in Illinois it could be a couple of billion dollars that's being withheld from the state. You've reported on how that's affected some Illinois food programs in particular. What are these programs all about?
Yeah, the program that we specifically know was affected is it's the local food purchase program, but that's probably more commonly known to people as the Illinois Eats program. And essentially what's happened here is the state received notice last week that the U.S. Department of Agriculture is not going to be reimbursing the state of Illinois for any costs incurred with that program. All the funds and costs that the state has to carry out that program are reimbursed by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So that's got the state on the hook for $18 million that they're not going to be getting back for these costs. And it's kind of, really unclear exactly what's going to happen next. But this program provides a lot of fresh food to local food banks, food pantries, places in the community that people rely on for fresh food, especially in communities, as some farmers and food bank folks have told me, in places where there's not a grocery store readily available. And there's concern that people are going to miss this critical source of healthy food because the federal government has pulled back on this. So that's just one example. We've seen other food programs cut off in schools earlier this week. As you mentioned, the governor's office believes that it's upwards of $2 billion that the state is not going to be getting that they actually should be getting.
Wow, remarkable. I'm sure there will be more reporting on that in the weeks ahead. Last thing I want to ask you about is you've done a fair bit of coverage on the tariffs that the Trump administration, was going to propose or was going to impose and then didn't and then did. Where, just talk briefly about the role that international trade plays in the Illinois economy.
Yeah, it's a huge area. It's billions and billions of dollars that the state of Illinois imports and exports in international goods each year. But it's really notable that three of the four largest trading partners for the state of Illinois are both Canada, Mexico, and China. Canada is by far number one, especially when it comes to oil and natural gas that we get from Canada. And these tariffs are certainly going to have impacts on Illinois consumers, obviously, as well as consumers around the country, but a lot of Illinois goods, especially in the agriculture sector, where the state is one of the leading exporting states in the United in the country for agricultural goods, especially to China. And the real fear here is that this is going to be a hardship on Illinois farmers. It's going to cause prices to go up at the grocery store because of the goods that we are importing from these countries that the president has slapped big tariffs on. So, it's really unclear exactly how this is going to affect the Illinois economy at the moment, especially because the president has made several changes to the tariffs, even just this week. I think the bottom line from a lot of folks is that there is a good reason to be concerned, both as a consumer and both as the state as a producer of some of these goods that are now going to be tariffed because of retaliatory tariffs that these other countries have placed on the United States.
Ben Zielinski with Capital News, Illinois. Thanks for sharing your reporting with us today.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
This is the 21st show. We are in the middle of our Friday review of the week in politics, and we go now to Washington and Illinois Public Media's correspondent there, Linda Kenyon. She's with us live today. Linda, happy Friday.
Oh, happy Friday to you, Brian, after a very long week.
No doubt, and it's not over yet, and we are potentially hours away from a government shutdown. Where do things stand right now as we are going to air in the 11 a.m. Illinois time hour on Friday morning?
Well, in about, I'd say, an hour and a half, according to the schedule, and of course, these things do have a tendency to go long, but in the next hour and a half or so, the Senate is set to take the first test vote on a continuing resolution. This is the stopgap budget that would fund the federal government operations at current levels for another 6 months. And keep in mind that we're already operating on last fiscal year's budget because the Congress has not had an opportunity or has not been able to come together on funding at the current fiscal year. So this this first test vote will require 60 votes, and that's going to be a very tall order. Now, yesterday, the top Senate Democrat, Senator Chuck Schumer, did say on the Senate floor that he would support the bill, but he also said, look, you know, the consequences of supporting this bill versus not supporting this bill couldn't be more distasteful. He said that, you know, if the bill does not pass, there will be a government shutdown. Democrats will be blamed for it. And he says that this is a very bad, bad bill. But he basically said, look, you know, we're going to have to hold our nose and vote for it, because if we don't vote for it, the shutdown will cause catastrophic consequences for our economy. Democrats will be blamed for it. And in the face of what's happening with the DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, if these government agencies and departments are shuttered because of a government shutdown, well, there's no indication and no incentive for the DOGE to reopen those departments at any time in the future. So while he doesn't like the bill, he says, vote for the bill.
This has led to a huge, at least, you know, if you judge it by online commentary, a huge, what would you say, schism, perhaps even? Maybe that's too strong, but in the Democratic Party, we've seen Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin was reportedly with Schumer on voting to keep the government open. On the other hand, our Illinois Senator Tammy Duckworth tweeted this morning, quote, I refuse to vote for Republicans' slush fund bill that grants Trump and Elon Musk permission to continue rigging our government and our economy against the middle class. It would greenlight even more chaos and more cuts to critical programs. Hell no, I cannot support that. End quote from Senator Duckworth. Talk about how you are seeing this divide Democrats. We've even seen people talking about running primaries against Chuck Schumer, and the group that called for Biden to step down last summer has now called for Schumer to step down.
Yeah, it's become very, very ugly. The House also is lambasting the Senate because the Democrats over there say that they feel a deep sense of betrayal. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from New York says there is a deep sense of outrage and betrayal from the Senate Democrats. While the Senate Democrats can really have the power to stand up to the Trump agenda, the Trump budget, if you will, the Senate has more power. There's a, you know, the rules are different, that the Democrats could have made a difference. And in the House, they just didn't have the votes to stop the Republican bill. So they were looking to the Senate to stop it, to Senate Democrats in particular. And I will tell you that the schism that has developed within the Democratic Party is over a bill that everybody says they hate, but they you know, they may have to hold their nose and vote for it anyway. Some Republicans hate this bill as well. Senator Lindsey Graham, who is a staunch Trump loyalist and a very outspoken defense hawk, says that he met with the senator, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth earlier this week. They had a one-on-one conversation about the defense spending in the bill. And Senator Lindsey Graham came out later and he said, you know, this bill is CRA, you can fill in the last letter, but he said, but I'm going to vote for it because it does increase defense spending. But he hates the bill as well. So if everybody hates the bill, why are they voting on the bill? Well, because the stakes are very high right now. And if there's a government shutdown, there could be even more financial uncertainty and damage to the economy.
Last thing I want to ask you about is something else that happened in Washington this week with involving the president. Namely, he bought a Tesla. Not just that, he turned the White House's South Lawn into essentially an infomercial for Elon Musk's private business interests. Meanwhile, Musk reportedly signaled to Trump's political operation he'd give him $100 million to support candidates. That's on top of the $250 million he spent on Trump during last year's campaign. What the heck is going on?
Yeah, this was plain and simple a car commercial that was on the South Lawn of the White House. There's been a lot of outcry about that it is unseemly, inappropriate, and just debases the White House and the office of the presidency. President Trump wanted to, I suppose, give Elon Musk a little bit of a positive, if you will, press. And they had five Teslas in the driveway, the South Lawn area of the White House. And, you know, Elon Musk was there touting his wares. And the president said he was going to buy one. And he did. He's going to buy it. He said, I'm just not going to haggle over price. He's going to buy it at full cost, full price, doesn't want any special favors, et cetera, et cetera. Think of the optics of that, not only just turning the White House into a car commercial, but also buying a Tesla when people are losing their jobs in great numbers, especially in the Washington, D.C., Virginia area, where there's a very high concentration of federal workers. And people are, you know, have so much worry right now about how they're going to pay their bills and how they're going to put food on the table. So there's been a lot of backlash about Donald Trump buying a Tesla. Also, not to put too fine a point on it, but he's not allowed to drive.
You mean as president, because
that's right. Yeah. That's right. He will not be able to drive that vehicle. So he says he's going to allow his staff to drive it. But I have my doubts about that as well. So, yes, it was it made for great television, something that's very important to the president of the United States.
Mm, but, you know, ethics, not so much, perhaps. All right. Linda Kenyon covers Washington, D.C. for Illinois Public Media. Thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st show. More to come after a break. I want to take a moment to preview what we're going to be talking about on Monday. The Trump administration is dismantling the Department of Education, and it has laid off hundreds of workers, including some here in Illinois. We're going to talk about what that could mean for students here. If you have a question you want us to address in that conversation, let us know. Talk@21stshow.org is our email address. Talk@21stshow.org. All right, more to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.